I think I'd be grossly remiss if I didn't address the president's speech on Wednesday night. I don't know if you saw it. I almost fell off my chair as I saw it and what he had to say about the Islamic State. I truly believe that what we're witnessing currently take place is just the beginning of what the Apostle Paul describes as God sending a strong delusion. That's the only thing that I can even come close to reconciling what I witnessed as the President of the United States of America would say what he said. It wasn't so much my disbelief. It was more the world's belief, which is why I believe that this is the beginning of a strong delusion, a delusion so strong and so powerful that man will believe that which is false, which is exactly what I believe is beginning to come to pass presently. This is 2 Thessalonians 2:11. Because they rejected the truth of Jesus Christ. It's for this reason, Paul says, that God sends them a powerful delusion so that they will believe the lie. Pastor Chuck Smith once said that when you reject the truth, you open yourself up to the most bizarre of lies. If you reject the truth, the one who said, I am the way, the truth, and the life, when you reject Jesus Christ, who is the truth, not a truth, the truth, when you reject the truth, you'll believe any lie. And I think that is precisely what is happening today. I'm going to begin with just this one quote. It was early in the speech, quoting the president. Now, let's make two things clear. ISIL is not Islamic. No religion condones the killing of innocents. And the vast majority of ISIL's victims have been Muslim. And ISIL is certainly not a state. It was formerly Al-Qaeda's affiliate in Iraq and has taken advantage of sectarian strife and serious civil war to gain territory on both sides of the Iraq-Syrian border. It is recognized by no government nor by the people it subjugates. ISIL is a terrorist organization, pure and simple. And it has no vision other than the slaughter of all who stand in its way. Wow. I suppose it should come as no surprise that the very next day, Secretary of State John Kerry would tell CNN that the U.S. is not at war with ISIS. Interesting. I have never heard the president refer to them as ISIS or even IS, as they now refer to themselves as. I have only heard him refer to them as ISIL. Why? And this is an interesting question, and one for which has been brought up on a couple of occasions. To their credit, Fox News, Greta Van Susteren, I think it was Oliver North, she was interviewing. And she asked him repeatedly, three or four times, why does the president keep calling them ISIL? What, is there something to that? And much to my disappointment, if it was Oliver North or whoever the guest was, they said, no, that doesn't mean anything. Oh my goodness. It absolutely means something. Indulge me just briefly. I want to share with you why all of this is false on every level. I mean, it is wrong on every level. And again, the reason I believe it's the beginning of the aforementioned strong delusion. That's the only explanation I can come up with. First, and we looked at this in prior updates, but I think it's incumbent upon us to revisit why it is that there's this persistence in calling them ISIL. In fact, sometimes, and it's not just the president, you hear it often, they will actually pronounce the acronym, not ISIL, but ISIL. And every time they do, it just stabs me, and I'll explain why. I would submit that referring to them as ISIL, if you will, plays a pronounced role in this strong delusion, specifically as it relates to Israel, the Jewish people, God's chosen people. And here's how I get there. IS has made it clear in no uncertain terms that Jerusalem is the final destination for the formation and declaration of global domination. That's the vision that the president says they don't have. They have a very clear vision, and that's the vision. Now, I put this slide back up. We looked at this a while back, but this is just, in a nutshell, the who, what, when, why, where, and how of the Islamic State. We need look no further than to the writings of Islam to understand that the goal line is Israel. That's where the end zone is. And the goalposts are in Jerusalem. And this, my friends, is why they say ISIL. For you see, ISIL stands for the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant. Hang on to that for a second. ISIS is more specific in that it stands for the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria. So why the confusion back and forth calling them ISIS or ISIL, more so it seems as of late ISIL? Well, I believe that any reference to them as ISIL is, in effect, a denial of the very right of Israel to exist, and as such, lay claims to their eternal capital, Jerusalem. They want to wipe Israel off the map. They want to, by their own declaration, erase all of the borders in the Levant, which is the area that I'm going to show you a map of here shortly. Now, I believe that it is becoming increasingly plausible for the Islamic State to usher in the fulfillment of the prophecy found in Psalm 83. And I believe that because the countries, the nationalities that are mentioned in that Psalm 83 prophecies are the very ones that are geographically in the area known as the Levant. All the countries IS is seeking to establish a caliphate in. And what's a caliphate? It's a order, it's a law, it's a rule, it's a domination. In fact, they want global domination. They want a global caliphate. It's a one world order under Sharia law by force, which, by the way, is what Islam means. Islam means submit by force. And they are seeking now to establish this, if you prefer, new world order, i.e. an Islamic caliphate, where they have Islamic rule under Sharia law. And in this vision, They have in their sights all of these areas there listed in Psalm 83 by their ancient names. That's the sole goal of the IS. And it's interesting to me that it's also the sole goal of this alliance of nations in Psalm 83. Come, they say, let us destroy them as a nation so the name of Israel is remembered no more. In other words, let's erase the borders. Let's wipe them off the map. Let's remove the name Israel off the map. Very eerily similar. Here's the map of the Levant. Those of you who are good at geography, I flunked everything. Geography, geometry, all the classes. But very interesting. Can you see on the screen there? What's right smack in the middle of this area, this land bridge, as they call it, known as the Levant? Is it not Israel? See, by not even referring to them as ISIS, what you're saying is basically it's greater than Syria. It's they want to erase the borders of Syria too, which, by the way, we'll come to that in a moment. But is that not Isaiah 17? Now, I want to have you, and we've done this before, and I think it's good that we're doing it again. I'm going to show you next a map of the Promised Land. Now, and I just need to preface this by telling you that the map that I'm about to show you will show Israel, the Promised Land, with the pre-1967 borders. Like way pre-1967, like we're talking B.C. borders of Israel. You ready? And I get this picture in your mind. Now look at the comparison between the two. Is not the Promised Land virtually identical to the Levant? And isn't that something? Isn't that interesting? Is that why they refer to them as ISIL? You bet your sweet bippy. And I hope that's not a bad thing for a pastor to say. Let's look closer at the president's claim that the Islamic State is neither Islamic nor a state under this banner of no religion would condone this. His statement more specifically was no religion would condone the killings of innocents, and even to go as far as saying that the majority of their victims have been Muslim. Again, wrong on every level. The you know, it's been said that facts are stubborn things, and they are. The facts are well documented that the majority of their victims have not been Muslim. They have been Christians and Jews. There was another beheading yesterday. I wish they would stop showing these on the TV. It is playing right into the propaganda of the Islamic State. But Tony Blair, because it was British, a British guy was beheaded by another British Muslim. They're using these, by the way, for recruitment videos, and they're very successful in recruiting non-Arabs, incidentally, which is why they're showing these Brits. Very interesting. Tony Blair, of course, calls an emergency meeting to his credit. However, he says, quote, "These are not Muslims, these are monsters." And he said that in the context of that he still believes Islam is a peace-loving religion. I have to go on record and just make it very clear that if there are peace-loving so-called Muslims, they are not true Muslims. And I'm going to demonstrate why that is here in a moment. There's this phrase, radical Islam. And, you know, it's hard for me with Fox News. Certainly CNN is even worse. But, you know, they say these are Muslim extremists. These are radical, this is radical Islam. That's a redundancy. Islam is extreme. Islam is not peace-loving. Do you know that these Muslims that are doing what they're doing, they're actually true Muslims? They're obedient Muslims. They are doing what the Quran, the holy writings, tell them to do. Now, bear with me. Like our study in 1 Corinthians, this is a little bit intense today, I realize. And so if you don't come back next week, I absolutely understand. I want to share with you several verses from the Quran, which clearly demonstrate that not only does Islam condone this, Islam actually commands this. So Muslims who are quote-unquote peace-loving, they are not true Muslims. They are not obedient Muslims to the commands of the Quran. Quran 5:54. O believers, take not Jews and Christians as friends. They are friends of each other. Those of you who make them his friends is one of them. God does not guide an unjust people. Quran 47:4. When you meet the unbelievers, speaking of the Jews and the Christians, aka the infidel, smite their necks. In other words, behead them. Behead them. Quran 98:51. The unbelievers among, and this is interesting, the, quote, in caps, people of the book. God's people? The Bible? Is that? Yes. The Jews and the Christians, the people of the book, the Old Testament Jews, the New Testament Christians, the people of the book, and the pagans, listen to this, shall burn forever in the fire of hell. They are the vilest of all creatures. I'm quoting from the Quran. I'm not interpreting it, I'm quoting it. Quran 2:191. And slay them, kill them, wherever you find them, and drive them out of the places whence they drove you out, for persecution is worse than slaughter. Quran 5:33. The only reward of those who make war upon Allah and His Messenger, speaking of Muhammad, and strive after corruption in the land, will be that they will be killed, or listen to this, crucified, or have their hands and feet on alternate sides cut off. This is Islam. This is true Islam. This is a command. Do you know how many people, Christians especially, are being crucified by the Islamic State in obedience to this command in this verse in the Quran? They're crucifying children. Pastor, that's too much information. Well, someone's got to say it. Someone's got to speak the truth. This is the truth. Quran 8:12. I mean, I don't know how much clearer it can be. Terrorize and behead those who believe in scriptures other than the Quran. What, pray tell, scriptures is this referring to? The Holy Scriptures, the Bible, Old and New Testament. Terrorize and behead them? Is the Islamic State terrorizing and beheading those who believe in the scriptures? That's exactly what we see happening in real time right before our very eyes. This is the last one, thankfully. Quran 47:4. Do not hanker for peace with the infidels. Behead them when you catch them. Beheading is a sacred Muslim practice. Again, very clear, a command in the Quran. And by the way, just parenthetically, I'll say, very interesting. This has led some scholars to believe that Islam will play at best a pronounced role during the tribulation. Some even believe at worst it will be Islam during the tribulation that the Antichrist will come out of. Very interesting, both arguments. I happen to believe both have merit, and it doesn't have to be an either or, but that's another topic for another time. But very interesting, what is the punishment for not accepting the mark of the beast in your forehand or your forehead? Beheading. Beheading. Some have taken that to mean that that's the Islamic beheading. And if it is, then it's only going to get worse. And if we're beginning to see that which will ultimately find its fulfillment during the seven-year tribulation, and the rapture is before the tribulation, which it has to be, then how close are we? Let me turn a corner very quickly here. I want to address Kerry's comment that we're not at war with the Islamic State. Let me simply say that the Islamic State has declared war with us. And I'm personally finding it increasingly difficult when it comes to such statements as IS is not Islamic, or the statement that we're not at war with the Islamic State. And here's why. Jihad in Arabic means holy war. Holy war. When they declare jihad, they are saying a holy war. Now, here's the strong delusion coming back into play. Oh, jihad doesn't mean holy war. It means personal struggle. Okay. You know what? Let's just say for purpose of discussion that jihad means personal struggle or struggle. That's fine. Might I suggest that if it means struggle, then it becomes Hitler's Mein Kampf repackaged. What do you mean? Oh, Mein Kampf in German is my struggle. And dare I say that Hitler's struggle / jihad for a final solution may now have been reinvented as the struggle / jihad for the only solution, as evidenced by this graphic I found by just simply entering in the search jihad. And it pulled up this jihad, the only solution. Well, isn't that interesting? Is that a coincidence? I don't believe it is. See, Islamic jihad's propaganda comes under the guise of also a two-state solution, does it not? For Jews and Palestinians to live side by side in, quote, peace and security, does that not sound an awful lot like Hitler's struggle for a final solution? Or, if you prefer, only solution vis-a-vis this two-state solution? You need to know something about Islam. This was Muhammad and Saladin after him, and it's well documented. Here's how they destroy their enemy. They first make peace with them, and then they destroy them. They make peace with them so as to destroy them. Peace becomes the catalyst for the destruction. Arafat, when he was alive in America, he would, you know, in English, we want peace, you know, a two-state solution. He would get back to Ramallah and, Bethlehem, and he would say in Arabic, peace with Israel for us means the destruction of Israel. This is Islam. I find it very interesting that in Daniel's prophecy, there's the mention of that there by peace he will destroy many. By peace he will destroy many. Let me try to, I know this is kind of discombobulated a little bit, but let me just share with you some thoughts concerning America's plans to This was interesting. Launch airstrikes supremely in Syria, as opposed to launching them in Iraq. Now, we have a green light from Iraq to launch all the airstrikes we want, put all the boots on the ground that we want to fight IS. We don't have that from Syria, obviously. So why, pray tell, would the United States launch airstrikes in Syria when we have the green light to launch them in Iraq? Well, I point this out for a number of reasons, not the least of which is that Bashar al-Assad has made it very clear and stated that if the United States does this, it's an act of war. And make no mistake about it, Russia stands at the ready in its willingness to defend al-Assad. Putin needs Syria, which may point to the prophecy in Isaiah 17 that Damascus will become a ruinous heap. Interesting article, didn't have time to include it today, but it said that U.S. airstrikes in Syria is a problem for, quote, Damascus. They used the word Damascus, which is the capital of Syria that is used in Isaiah 17. I also find it interesting that on the very next day after the president's speech, which was of all days September 11th, the 13th anniversary, Russia would issue yet another warning against U.S. strikes on the Islamic State in Syria. I mean, are we that obtuse that we don't realize that launching airstrikes is going to raise the ire of Russia? It's going to bring into play Russia? And is this not also potentially the prophecy in Ezekiel 38, which goes hand in hand? They all intersect. Isaiah 17, very interesting. Psalm 83. Those alliance of nations close in proximity to Israel, they're not mentioned. They're conspicuously absent from Ezekiel 38. Does that mean that Psalm 83 is fulfilled prior to Ezekiel 38? I believe it is. Interesting, Syria is not mentioned in Ezekiel 38. Could it be that Isaiah 17 is fulfilled prior to Ezekiel 38, explaining Syria's absence? I believe so. What's my point? My point is if all of these are already in play, and it looks as if they're on the cusp of being fulfilled. Oh my goodness. How close are we? How close are we? The very same day, 9/11, Jerusalem Post. And this was published on 9/11, the headline reading, 10 Arab states agree to join U.S.-led military campaign against Islamic State. This is interesting. I've had a plethora of emails from people saying, Is this the 10 toes of Daniel and the 10 horns of Revelation? Well, I don't know. I mean, that interpretation would require a number of presuppositions, but I guess we'll see. Time will tell. I would suggest that one would even be more hard-pressed to dismiss the odds of everything that's happening geopolitically as just being mere coincidence prophetically. I mean, you really have to do some math to come up with that number. Maybe a better way to say that is, the Bible's precision accuracy prophetically cannot be explained as coincidence just by sheer virtue of the statistical improbability. I don't know what the odds of all of these coming together exactly as God's word said they would. I don't know what the statistical probability of that is. Here's the bottom line. If Bible prophecy is being fulfilled right before our very eyes, and I would argue that it absolutely is, then it would stand to reason that the most important question we should be asking ourselves is, are we ready? Can I just ask you, are you ready? I don't do this very often. In fact, it's been several months since I did, but I want to share with you in closing an email that I received this last week. It's from a precious sister in Christ. She's currently in Israel. She writes, "Dear Pastor Farag, greetings from Jerusalem. I have been volunteering in Israel for the last few years, and I listen to you on the Middle East update on YouTube almost every day while I am working on the computer. I have sent the links to friends in South Africa, USA, Ireland, and Africa and other parts of the world, as your updates are word-based and prophetic. On the 21st of July, I had sent your link from July 6th's update to friends and to my son in South Africa. In your Middle East update, you asked the question, are you ready? That was the last email my son had got from me, as he was killed in a car accident on the 31st of July. I want to thank you for your message. There was so much evidence of the Holy Spirit having taken over in his life. The last week, he had changed his Facebook message and WhatsApp message to God and Jesus. That's why we do what we do here on Sunday mornings. That's why we give time to the study of Bible prophecy. Would you please stand? We'll close in prayer. Lord, I thank you that those of us who live with that expectancy of your imminent return live our lives in such a way that we have a light touch on this world and the things of this world. That those of us who believe that you could come at any time, that that trumpet could sound at any time, that the effect that it has on our lives is that it purifies our lives. We get our affairs in order. But Lord, there are those who may even be here in this church today, or watching this or hearing this by some other way, that don't know you. And that which I've shared today has been utterly terrifying, and rightfully so. Lord, I pray that this would be that needed alarm that is sounded, so that those who are sleeping will wake up to the reality of the hour in which we live. That we would look up and lift up our heads, knowing that our redemption draws nigh. Lord, I just pray for anyone who doesn't know you, that they would know you, that they would call upon you, confess with their mouth, believe in their hearts, and that today would be the day of their salvation.